Blog Talk Radio.
August 20th, 2012. I'm your host, Tom Riedel, and waiting to join us shortly is Robin Eduardo. Brief intro to today's show. We will have on Uwe Poznanski, and she has written a book called Apart from Love, and we're really looking forward to hearing from her, and she'll be on at about quarter after the hour. Also, to where to find us on the internet, you can go over to tomriedel.com/blog. Go over to our blog over there at the Writer's Lounge and read our reviews and other blog entries that I have made. And you can also listen to the show in the Blog Talk Radio player located in the upper left-hand corner of the site. You can also, of course, find us on Facebook. Go over to the Blog Talk Radio site. Quickest way to find us over there is look for the link at the top of the page. Click on the link and like us. There's a lot of likes over there for you. There's about 1,400 of them now, and we're moving on up. Also, of course, you can contact us at twl11@yahoo.com. That's our email address. And we are now on Twitter. In fact, been doing a lot of tweeting today and got some followers behind us, and I hope they will come over to the show and have a listen to the show. And the link that I just sent out will help them do that. Upcoming guest authors on September 3rd, I will be revisiting author Rochelle Hruska, and we'll be taking the Writer's Lounge show on the road for the first time. We're going over to River Falls, Wisconsin, over to her coffee shop over there, actually her coffee house over there, and we're going to try to save it because they're in danger of closing their doors, and we want to do everything we can to help Rochelle out and sell her revised book that just came out. So we'll be doing that on September 3rd, and the time for that will be 4:30 p.m., and it'll be a 90-minute show. Also on September 10th, August to Life is the name of the book. The author is Maxie Stone, and he'll tell us a story about a race, relationships, and love. And it'll give you a pause on where we are today as a society in regards to interracial relationships. That's a very interesting book to read, and I really enjoyed doing that. Also, of course, we have a sponsor, Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple to in content and easy to navigate, while also delivering an effective, eye-popping design that will attract an interest to the books you write, along with the other products or services that you offer. So head on over to magicpenwebdesign.com. and fill out a free estimate, and let us help you. I am the person in charge over there, and the CEO, you would call it. So I will work together with you in helping you develop a site. We've already got a couple clients, and we are working with them, and that will be fun to do with you also. Now I'd like to introduce my lovely and talented co-host, Robin Eduardo, all the way from New Jersey.
Hey.
How are you, Robin?
Pretty good.
What's new with you?
Nothing really much is going on lately. Summer's winding down, and I'm going to be traveling out to Phoenix, but I am going to try to call in if I can briefly take a moment to show my support for the coffee house, and hopefully things start looking up for her. So, yeah. But other than that, yeah, just have my trip out to Phoenix, and then in a couple of months, I'm looking forward to attend the Erie Horror Fest. So,
ooh, that's going to be fun. Too bad you can't do a live remote from there. That would be great.
There's so much going on. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
What's the date on that, Robin?
I don't have it in front of me. I believe it's October 12th-ish.
October 15th.
I don't know.
The Monday.
11th.
One of our days.
11th through the something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, but I know it is coming up. This doesn't really help people that are looking. But you can look up the Erie, but it's spelled with two E's, even though it's, you know, the Lake Erie region, Erie, Pennsylvania. But they've made it Erie.
Erie. Fits right in with the mood.
Yeah. And it's more of like a film festival type of thing, but they are going to have quite a few of the Romero people will be there, and so I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be the first convention I'm attending in 2 years now.
Wow, cool. You know,
yeah.
Can you believe it that Halloween is almost just 2 months away?
Yeah, I know. I look forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and we should have a good lineup in October. Another little plug here, Trucker Ghost Stories is going to be on, I believe the date of that is October 1st, and it was written by a local author, another local author here in the Twin Cities area, Annie Wilder, who's got a very haunted house that I had the pleasure of going to, and she will be on the show either in person or by telephone on that date, and we will discuss a lot of stories that she collected throughout the country about truck drivers and other drivers on the roads and the highways that have encountered strange phenomenon out there. So I just got done reading that. I'll be doing a review on that shortly, and I'm looking forward to that part of the season coming up, the spooky time for everybody. And I know there's a lot of writers out there who love that kind of thing. So we're looking forward to having some of those people on also. Also, I have to tell you, Robin, every time I go in and look at the listens, I am like shocked and rocked back on my heels. I'm totally just flabbergasted by the numbers of people that are listening to our show. The last time I told you, we had the last three shows that we had had, we had 1,700 listens. Now listen to this. Drum roll. We've had, in the last two shows, I know you know the number, but I was going to ask you to guess, but the number of listens for our last two shows hit 3,000. So what we are doing, I have no idea, because I know that my abilities and my talent hasn't increased. I know yours is maybe a little bit, but what is it that we're doing that are bringing in these people? It can only be one thing, and that would be our authors. People are finally getting around to listening to the show. And also, of course, Twitter has a lot to do with it, and Blog Talk Radio site, I think, too, because they've been getting a lot of our links over there, and so that's great. I think that's fantastic, and it kind of, for somebody that's had stage fright their whole life, I'm beginning to get a little tiny bit nervous with the idea that there's thousands of people out there listening to me right now. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's a little unnerving, but you know what? We're professionals. We'll get through it.
We are?
I think so. I think that's what a couple people have been telling me. It's kind of funny that they would say that, but oh well.
We try our best, don't we?
We do all right, I think. And yeah. The other thing that I'd like to mention here, and there's been a lot of discussion, it was brought up by Brian Anderson, our good friend Brian Anderson, who will be on the show in November to promote his latest book of the Gatling Chronicles. But he suggested, because, of course, it takes money to run this show, nobody knows how much that is, and I'm not really going to put the number out there because I don't think that's fair to do, but it does cost. And he has suggested that if authors wanted their book link up on the Facebook site, would be on the left-hand side, not over on the right-hand side where everybody puts in links and it comes in this little small little box, but over on the left-hand side where you have the opportunity to put up pretty large graphics. But he has suggested that authors donate between $10 and $13 for their book and the link to their site to be put up there once a week. And I have considered this, and I put up an announcement on the page and got a very good response from mm-hmm. it. So I am going to consider that. And also, with the extra money that comes in, I'm thinking of possibly bringing in another reviewer and maybe pay them a little bit of money, not a lot, but to kind of help me with the number of books that I've been getting, because I know our show slots are filled up, but our review slots can go on forever. As long as we have books to read, we can do reviews. So I am considering that, and I will get back to you folks here within the next week or two to let you know what we're going to do in regards to that. So, Robin, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, realistically, you know, in the beginning, it's everything that you can do to establish yourself and to create a presence. But now that we're kind of past that first hurdle, we're receiving more and more and more and more authors who are interested in having their books reviewed and to, you know, possibly promote themselves on this site, you know, through our interviews. And, you know, we do get bogged down. We're going to get bogged down. Not, you know, as much, like you said, as long as people want to continue to submit their books, you know, we're going to review. But there's only so many books you could read in a day,
right.
You know?
I need
so
a life.
You're right. Yeah, they're definitely, well, you're newly single.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we got to free up some time for you to go hog wild out there. No.
I'd prefer to spread my wings.
Yeah, well, it would be nice.
I don't
but, you know, realistically, you know, all joking aside, it has come to that point where, you know, we are going to have to look into having somebody help out with the reviews and, you know, just going through, you know, I don't want to call it a slush pile because it's not that. It's
right.
It's almost like, you know, obviously we're going to review as much as we can. It's not that picky, but we do, you know, these are all things that we have to take into consideration. You know,
absolutely.
As we become more and more buried.
Right,
and,
right.
And we are approaching that. That's a
yep.
realistic thing to bring up.
And it will help us immensely and also help the authors out there who haven't been able
yeah.
to get in to get out there and get their books noticed on our site. Now,
right.
Speaking of reviews, I'd like to get on with the main event here.
Oh,
a Part
yay.
Of Love was written by Uwe Poznanski and published by Amazon Digital Services in 2012. You may purchase it at amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author over at uweart.blogspot.com. And this is what Amazon has to say about Uwe's book. Written with passionate conviction, this story is being told by two of its characters, Ben, a 27-year-old student, and Anita, a plain-spoken, spunky, uneducated redhead, freshly married to Lenny, his aging father. Behind his back, Ben and Anita find themselves increasingly drawn to each other. They take turns using an old tape recorder to express their most intimate thoughts, not realizing at first that their voices are being captured by him. Meanwhile, Lenny is trying to keep a secret from both of them. His ex-wife, Ben's mother, a talented pianist, has been stricken with an early-onset Alzheimer's. Taking care of her gradually weighs him down. What emerges in these characters is a struggle, a desperate, a daring struggle to find a path out of conflicts, out of isolation, from guilt to forgiveness. And this is what I have to say in my review. The author has taken a very complicated premise involving three complex characters and interlaced them all into a story that will seep into the hearts and souls of many readers. It is surely destined to become a novel that you will well remember for a long time to come. The richness of this tale becomes beautifully evident in the way the author delves into every intricate detail of the story. Not overly done, the narrative fits perfectly, pulling you along, tantalizing you to want more. From the emotional hinges that grip each character to the wonderful visions of their places in time, I was caught by the romantic taboo appeal of the tale and the heartbreak that life can sometimes deliver to those who find themselves standing on the precipice of love. As a backdrop to the story, or more appropriately described, a musical melody of memories continues to play in the background, calling out to Ben's father, Lenny. It's the devastating illness of Alzheimer's that has robbed Lenny's ex-wife of her musical past, and it also has a huge impact on Ben, who has to also cope with the loss of his mother. If there are first-time novels that truly belong on the New York Times bestsellers list, this one is it. This read, from beginning to end, remains solidly at the very top of the star rating for me. It is excellent work, and it is my pleasure to now introduce to the show, to the Writer's Lounge, Uwe Poznanski. Uwe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How did
very
I do
nice your, to be here with you at the Writer's Lounge.
How did I do with your name?
You did wonderfully. Yes, I'm really grateful because I have been to interviews where my name was mangled beyond recognition. And even though the interviews have been wonderful otherwise, it would be difficult for readers to find me if they don't know my name.
Yes. Well, you've certainly written a masterpiece, in my opinion, Uwe, and we're glad to have you on the show. And Robin is here to welcome you also. Say hello, Robin.
Yeah, hi. It's great to hear your voice. It's so interesting. What nationality are you?
Originally, I was born in Israel, and I came here about 30 years ago. The accent is still fresh.
Ah, yeah. It's very, very interesting. But I can understand you perfectly clearly, so it's not that difficult at all.
Not at all. And Uwe, could
yes.
you read an excerpt from your book?
Yes. What I'm going to read to you is actually the story of Ben as a child. This used to be a short story that I wrote some time ago, and the character didn't let go, the character of Ben as a 12-year-old. And so in the story, he sees his grandmother collapse and his father try to revive her. And then he tries the same technique on his fish, and this is what I'm going to read to you. So this is Ben talking. The fish, it seems to be gulping for air. Maybe it forgot how to breathe. I know I can fix it. First, I rub the mouth delicately with my finger. Then I try to massage the entire body. I'm doing my best, my very best, to be gentle. But in the end, some scales tear off the body, and a tiny fin flakes away. At this point, I must do something, and fast, just like Dad. He did what he could for Grandma, and blew his breath into her. And his breath was magical, because it lasted in her somehow for the next 2 weeks. I can do better than that for this little body, even with a few scales or a fin missing. So I take a deep breath, put my lips to the fish, but then the smell, the touch, it makes me pause for a minute. Still, I can't give up. I must be brave, just like Dad, or else the spell may be broken. So again I gasp, and with frantic hope, I give a full-blown puff. The red eyes seem to be looking at me, and the tail is hanging over my finger, and it looks limp and a bit crumpled. I can't allow myself to weep. No, not now. So I wipe the corner of my eye. Now if you watch closely, right there, you can see that the tail is still crinkling. I gasp and blow again. I blow and blow, and with a last gasp effort, I go on blowing until all is lost. Until I don't care anymore. I mean it. I don't care. But the tears come. They are starting to flow. And there is nothing, nothing more I can do. Then I feel Mum, the smell of her skin. Here she is, wrapping her arms around mine. Softly, gently, she releases the fish and takes me to her bed. And Dad says nothing, but makes room for me. And I curl myself in the dent between them. And it feels so warm here and so sweet that at last I can lose myself and I cry myself to sleep.
Wow. What I got from that when I read that was it's one of the scenes in the book where it's very emotional, it's humorous, it's moving, and it's sad all at the same time. And when a writer is able to do that, I think that it does pull you into not just the story, but also to know more about the character, which you just did beautifully there. But as I had said, your story is extremely rich in detail and in content, as was mentioned in my review on the Writer's Lounge. Where does one learn to write like that, Uwe?
Well, writers that captivate you, they have a way with the pen. They can sweep you off your feet and into the page, into the story, to a different time, a different place. So how do they do it? Like Yogi Berra used to say, you can see a lot just by looking. For example, when Anita stands on the pier, on the Santa Monica pier, and she leans over the railing and she spots her husband out there in a certain seafood restaurant with another woman, you can be sure that I have studied every detail about this restaurant, that I have looked inside the restaurant and outside the restaurant in different hours and studied the menu so that I, by going online and checking the menu and selecting the dishes that Anita might wish to remember in her narrative. And so what she says about it is this. She says, I could see the slice of lime on the lip of the glass, and I closed my eyes, but still I was blocked from smelling it. I tried in vain to bring back the touch of salt around the rim and the scent of butter on the mashed potatoes and the meaty flavor of wild mushrooms and the pleasure you get with every gulp of hot, thick clam chowder. I could almost lick the spoon and pinch the bread and wipe the bowl with it, because I had known all that. So she had known all that because I have gone online to check the menu. And this is true about every aspect, every detail of the story.
Very powerful. What do you think there, Robin?
I think that she's really done her homework. Now, whether this was taught to you, Uwe, or if you just kind of instinctively, you know, it just came upon you that this is what you should do. It's nice to know that you do apply that research and try to make the story as cinematic as possible in your recollections of how it would really be. You know,
right.
You're illustrating it through the words. So that I'm impressed. Really
Thank
great
you very
writing.
Much. Really part of it is just being an artist as well. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you've seen my work, but
mm-hmm.
it's part of how I see the world. I see it very detailed,
yeah.
very vivid, a lot, you know, quite emotional.
I think
an
that
emotional
has a
impact
lot,
for me, so I can deliver that to the reader.
I think it has a lot to do with it, Uwe. We've also had another artist in our program who also wrote a story, and it was also very rich in detail. And I think
mm-hmm.
being an artist with the medium of paint and brush adds a lot to the story-making part of it also. Your characters seem to come to life on the page, filled with a certain amount of appeal. And they also totally capture us with the anguish and heartbreak of real life, as you did in your story here. As a writer, how did you get to know your characters, Lenny, Ben, Anita, and Natasha? What did you do to get into your characters, as it were?
Actually, the characters got into me, by which I mean that they sprang to life so vividly because they were living in my head for a whole year. And so the story is told from two points of view, that of Ben and that of Anita, which gave me the opportunity to illustrate how the same events along the arc of the story, seen from different angles and through different experiences in life, can be interpreted in entirely different ways. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with Anita, who is this girl standing in between Ben and his father. She's married to his father, and yet she has something that a spark between her and Ben. The way I wrote her, she is a sharp contrast to both Lenny and his son, because unlike their refined and learned grammar, hers is utterly atrocious. I couldn't just drop in a double negative here and there sparsely. So instead, I dropped it in quite liberally. Sometimes it's really jarring to listen to her. And I had really wicked fun with the way that she talks. And on the other end is Natasha, who is a contrast, provides both a reflection of her physically, because she looks, Anita and Natasha, the previous wife, look on the outside very similar, but their character is totally different. And Natasha, who is inflicted with Alzheimer, has very few lines of dialogue. And yet she leaves a profound, sometimes a troubling effect on the other characters. Whenever she appears in the story, it's to mark a distance between the way she used to be and the way she is now, a distance that is growing more and more in time. So even from her first line of dialogue, when she asks her husband, Lenny, "Are you having a thing again?" The use of the word thing can give you the first inkling that she was already starting to lose words, that words have started to escape her as far back as 17 years ago.
Yeah, and I noticed in the story, too, once again, as you talk about the, as its writers usually talk about, whether the character controls us or we control the characters.
Yeah.
And when a story is powerful enough, I believe that the characters normally would control the writer, because I think your characters have to come to their own life. They have to come alive and sort of steer you in the direction of where they want it to go, rather in being the other way around. I know writers who have, I've talked to just recently in that regard, and that's what they've been telling me, is that it makes for much more, and I keep using the word rich, but it adds to the story much better than if you went the other way around with that. But I also noticed that the music plays a part in your story. Do you listen to music while you write? Where do you go to write?
Well, when I start writing a story, I jot little notes to myself everywhere that inspiration strikes, on a little napkin or whatever. But as I go deeper and more seriously into the writing process, I find myself usually at home with my laptop, and the hours just fly by. I start early morning, and after what seems like minutes, I realize it's already time for dinner, which is wonderful. I mean, there's nothing as joyful as the creative, as being in the creative zone. Now, you ask about music. In Apart From Love, as soon as I introduced a white piano into the story, the first chapter is called The White Piano, just the presence of this instrument in Ben's apartment suggested to me a variety of scenes, such as the musical duet. You must remember that one. The question then becomes, how do you go into writing a duet, writing it in a story, when your knowledge about playing the piano is not much to speak of? because I don't have any musical education. And the only instrument that I ever played was a little piccolo.
That's interesting.
So I found several ways of learning the intricate details. One way was I watched numerous videos of playing duets on the piano. And another way was I studied every note in the fingering of every phrase in a music piece called The Entertainer. And as a result, I wrote this. This is in Ben's voice now from the chapter about the duet. And he says, "And before this musical phrase fades out, Anita straightens her back and places her hand on the keys. Then, to my astonishment, she plays the next phrase of music, this time with raw, intense force, which I never knew existed in her, bringing it to the verge of destruction, making it explode all around me. And I, in turn, explode with the following one, because how can I let her outdo me? I am, after all, the entertainer." So this all comes from learning, you know, again, as I said, with the menu and with, you know, what this particular seafood restaurant can provide. The same type of research that I do gives me just the groundwork upon which to build the emotional content.
Right. And as they say, write what you know, but sometimes you don't know the music, but like you say, you can get a feel of the behaviors involved with playing and in observing somebody is part of the writer's job also. So pay attention to detail, which obviously you mm-hmm. have incredible in everything from food to music to speech to, you know, Alzheimer's, which is a horrible disease that many people are dealing with today. And it's also impacted my family too. But it's incredible what you've done with this story. Robin, do you have anything for Ubi?
No, you're taking all my words.
Ah.
But it's true. It's just so interesting. Excuse me, to hear you speak about, you know, how you're inspired to write and the process that you go through, you know, all that research and everything. I'm just so impressed by it. And I think
when
I can learn something from you.
Yourself, I know from reading about you that you have written No Redemption from the Dead, and just the title of it takes my breath away.
yeah, there was a lot of thought that did go into the title. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Actually,
even that had a little...
Ubi, she did read an excerpt of her book online here on her show several shows ago, and it was incredible. I'm just so hoping that we can read that in book form at some point here in not too distant future.
Yeah, I'm working on it. The another writer that we interviewed, Eric Shellman, is now my beta reader, so he's been helping me out a lot.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely great. Very important to have beta readers.
Yes, to have that input. So, yeah, I really have a lot of respect for you, Uvi, that you do put so much time and effort into the crafting of your book, of the story. And
I'm just
and
consumed
all
with it.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. And speaking of detail there, Uvi, the horrible disease, Alzheimer's, certainly plays a critical role in your novel, as we just discussed. Can you tell us about any personal experiences or research that you did with that disease to bring this subject into your story?
Sure. I actually know the impact of Alzheimer's, of how it robs the patient of his mind and leaves just the shell behind, from watching the last couple of years in my father's life, trying to talk to him over the phone from the other side of the globe and also visiting him, and also from visiting patients in a home. But in addition to this, I did extensive research about how it's diagnosed, how you solve, as a family member, the problem of placing a loved one in an Alzheimer's home. And in general, the emotional roller coaster ride of blame and guilt that takes place in a family. And so, I even looked up online the medical analysis of brain images. And it's this that allowed me to write this about Natasha. This is a segment about her, about the moment where they finally diagnose her with early onset Alzheimer's. So Ben describes this. The doctors, they point out the overall loss of brain tissue, the enlargement of the ventricles, the abnormal clusters between nerve cells, some of which are already dying, shrouded eerily by a net of frayed, twisted strands. They tell her about the shriveling of the cortex, which controls brain functions such as remembering and planning. And that is the moment when, in a flash, Mom can see clearly, in all shades of gray blooming there on that image, how it happens, how her past and her future are slowly, irreversibly being wiped away until she's a woman forgotten.
Wow.
So to write that, I had to, you know, look at the images and try to describe, maybe not in a medical way, but artistically, what it is that you see on such images and what it means emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you captured that very beautifully with the words you write in just a few sentences. When I read, I was impressed, as we've just been talking about over and over, about your detail of writing the story. You had a very unique way of telling the story in Apart from Love. Can you tell us about the decision process that was involved when you first thought of how you would write it?
Sure. Well, in every task that you undertake, you usually hear this advice that you have to start at the beginning and continue down the middle and then finish at the end. And writing is no different. The problem is that as you advance diligently over the months of writing down this path, you may find, to your surprise, that you're getting better, that you're getting more proficient at your craft. And suddenly you can feel that the opening of this chapter that you're writing this week sounds so much catchier than the previous one, and its ending more powerful, which ends up requiring constant reevaluation, and you have to constantly rework the previous chapters. So in my case, the process of writing was really cyclical. By the time that I completed the last chapter, I knew that I had to go back to the beginning and restructure, if not rewrite it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the other little tip about the process of writing, I write right in the middle of writing, one of the middle chapters, I just stopped, and I turned my attention to write the last chapter, which is a kind of a prologue. It's called Editorial Notes, which you may have read. And in this chapter is a minor character, whose name is Mr. Bliss, comes to visit the Santa Monica apartment after Ben and Anita have already left the place for good. And his description of the place provided me with a stage set for the last scene, which I haven't written yet. So what he sees is that the white piano is gone, the space there is empty, and the mirror lies broken in shards on the bedroom floor. And how would all these things happen? I didn't know that yet. But now I had an ending and a last scene, the scenery of the last scene, waiting for me, which gave the story, let it gain speed and purpose in the writing.
Mm-hmm. I noticed
also
there's also a blend in there in the story, because as we learn, Lenny, Anita, and Ben are talking throughout the story in different chapters,
mm-hmm.
and some people, or meaning some readers, would have a difficult time following along, but you sort of blended that all together, and the fact that a lot of the stories came from recordings that were being recorded by Lenny, or I'm sorry, am I right there? Lenny, right? Would be Ben's dad.
Yeah.
Was also an interesting part of how you told your story. It wasn't just from Ben and Ida and Lenny, but also from Lenny's experiences through his recordings.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
It was very good. Robin?
No, I'm sorry. I got lost in what everybody was saying. That's a very interesting point to bring up, you know, the point of view from the recorded, you know, things that they passed to each other, and how, you know, Lenny sort of, you know, how it was revealed to him. So, I mean, it's interesting because they do say, you know, switching around point of views, you know, that it's a big no-no, and it's not so much that she's switching around the point of view in the narrative, but that you get into each person's head and see it from a completely different perspective, which
absolutely.
I think is very unique. So, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting that she did that.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it takes a lot of skill to be able to pull that off, is what I'm trying to
say.
Yeah,
every time that I finish, let's say, talking in her voice, and I have to move over now to the chapters where he starts talking, this transition takes something out of you, because it's like you have to enter a different skin all of a sudden, the skin of the next character.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's the ability to blend it all in together like you would if you were, as we use the food analogy here, blending it all together to come up with the perfect dish when we're cooking. So I suppose you can kind of look at it that way. But and also what kind of pulls us along in the story is that special kind of love story that's going on between Anita and Ben. And I'm really interested to hear, Uwe, will we hear from them again?
Well, would we hear from them again? Tom, having read the novel, you must already suspect that I amuse myself by tantalizing my readers. So when I read chapters of this book to live audiences, and some listeners responded tongue-in-cheek that they might need to go take a cold shower now. So even if I knew the answer to this question, being a tantalizer, do you think that I would tell it to you?
We're going to have to keep visiting your sites and find out from later on in the future here whether or not Ben and Anita will continue their little love affair. And well, it's more than a love affair. It's actually a deep-rooted love I think they have for each other. But that's something that we'll be patiently waiting for you to reveal, hopefully, in the near future. We have also learned, of course, you had mentioned that you're an artist, but we also know, or I know, I don't know if Robin has done her research, but we know that you have been an architect, a poet, and a software engineer. And how has these other careers influenced your novel writing?
Well, being an artist is really tightly coupled with the way that I see the world and the way that I write. One of the reviewers on Amazon for Apart From Love wrote this about me. She said, Uwe starts with a clean canvas and dabs a little paint here and a little paint there as she develops her characters and creates her masterpiece. Her strokes then become broader, more passionate, more vivid and vibrant as she continues to let her characters' stories unfold. And you asked about being a poet. Now, for the use of rhythm and rhyme, the words in poetry become very overlaid with meanings. And so they impact you, they evoke feelings and thoughts, which is exactly what I bring from my poetry into my prose, into Apart From Love. I listen, even now when we are speaking, to the rhythm of speech, the way that we all stumble over our words when we are overcome by emotions. And then I write the dialogue in Apart From Love. in the voice of my characters, in the rhythm of their breathing. And now about my previous professions, really reincarnations. My master's degree in architecture and my master's degree in computer science and the work experience that I have had in both fields, these are invaluable to me when writing. For example, as a software engineer, I developed software for medical devices, including ultrasound machines, which allowed me now to write this scene with Anita, where she is watching the ultrasound image of her baby on the screen. And she says, this is how she describes it, with a soft, squelching sound, little specks glitter in the dark fluid. And there, just behind them specks, something moves, something catches the light. And like, wow, for a second there, I could swear I could see a hand, my baby's hand waving, then turning to float away. This isn't exactly what I expected, because like, not only is that fluid kind of see-through, but to my surprise, so is the little hand. Like, you can spot not only the faint outline of flesh on them, but the shine of the bones coming at you, too. So again, unless I have seen this and worked with it, you know, with the sonographers to develop the software, I wouldn't have all this. In this case, I didn't need the research done because that's part of my work experience.
Yeah.
But it gives you, you know, a basis upon which you can write.
It makes it easier to paint those pictures with your words.
Yes.
You know, because you already can envision it in your mind. So, you know, you have that first step already laid out, and then it's just a matter of being able to you know, create the prose to reflect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just
yes. Interesting.
Well, your relation to your past employment and that what you just described, I'm kind of left speechless, believe it or not. And I can't see that because I'm a show host. But anyway, I'm still having... Wow. That's
We're really dealing with a very deep person here.
We are.
I don't know if either of us have the mental capacities to handle all this awesome brain.
I'm trying. I really am trying, but I will say what I did say in my review, and that is she belongs on the New York Times bestselling list. This book belongs there.
Yes.
You humble me. Thank you so much.
I really truly believe that, and I don't know if anybody out there is listening to the show from that area of the publishing world, but if you are, you better pick up a copy of Apart from Love, because I'm sure you're going to be very pleasantly surprised by what we have read in your book, Ruby, and we are just blown away by all of this here. Getting on to the next question that I have, if I can get my mind to work here. Of course, after you've worked and completed that masterpiece, obviously, you have to publish it. So do you have any challenges or the experience in the publishing phase of producing Apart from Love? And what advice would you like to pass along to our listeners in that respect?
Sure. Well, publishing is one challenge after another. There's never a dull moment. So to be an indie author and publisher, you must thrive on problem solving. Otherwise, you might as well go traditional publishing. To give you just one aspect of publishing, one thing that I've gone through, let's talk about the cover design, which I take with utmost seriousness, because it gives a face to my story. It must express it faithfully in graphical terms. In my mind, when you take my book into your arms, you must be rewarded by holding a work of art. And this reward starts with the cover, which opens the door, both literally and figuratively, and sweeps you in page after page into a different world. So in the case of the front cover of Apart from Love, I designed it based on my own oil painting. And having seen it, I offer it to your interpretation if the figure on the cover is dancing out of joy or else in sheer frustration, getting herself tied in the red fabric. In my mind, I likened the fabric to chewing gum into which you step and you can never release yourself. And the more you fight to free yourself, the more you become entangled. And just a few days ago, thinking about this, the image that I put on the cover, I wrote a little poem about it. And it's just a few lines, and here it is. It says, "Shimmering luster, let me try, let me reach you. Layers beyond layers of red, all aglow. With trembling fingers I touch flimsy tissue. It comes down upon me, folding high into low. I dance with abandon, with no inhibition. Entangled in fabric, I can no longer flee. Can't breathe, for now I can see the strange fusion. Now I know this tissue is me." So this is just about one little aspect, just the cover design.
Right, and it's a long process to get through, and I keep telling everybody out of frustration a lot of times that when an author comes to me that I've had on the show in the past, and they say, "Well, Tom, what do I do next? I'm not getting my book sold. It's not selling. What can I do?" And all I can tell them is, keep plugging it. Get out there and just spend as much time as you possibly can on the social networks. And even if you have the ability to go to your local bookstores and ask them to display your books, go ahead and do that. Doesn't hurt to try. And I really would like at some point, as I was talking to my friend the other day, is I would really like to get a hard copy of your book, Uwe, and have it displayed in my bookcase, because I do believe that great works belong in a bookcase, not just in digital format as we have been used to here.
Absolutely. So, it feels different when you have a book in your arms.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important. And now I would like to ask you, where does the title Apart From Love come from, and what does it mean to you? Meaning, what does love mean to you?
Well, in this book, the word love is used very sparingly. And it's so rare that it's being used that when it's finally uttered, the power of it becomes overwhelming. The theme of the book is this fear that we all have, Anita and Ben, men and women alike, the fear of coming out to the open with our most intimate feelings and having to face the risk of rejection and of pain. And this is expressed by Ben in one of the places, one of the three places in the book that the word apart, that the word love even is mentioned. And he says this, he says, I can't make up my mind whether it has been a mistake, I mean, just standing there in confusion, facing her, saying nothing, when in fact, in spite of what she may think, I had it, really, I had the words right there at the tip of my tongue to tell Anita how desperately I want her. There's no need to torture myself. This woman is not for me. No, I repeat, not for me. I'm lucky, so lucky, that I have managed to restrain myself somehow and bite my lips. Nothing has been said, nothing surrendered. For my own sake, I should have been much more careful. Now, even in her absence, I find myself in her hands, which feels strange to me. I am surrounded and at the same time isolated. I am alone. I am apart from love. So this isolation that we all fight, that we all find safety in sometimes, is really the theme of this book. Shall we get out of isolation or shan't we?
Yes. Robin, are you still there or are you totally...
Yeah, no, I'm still here. It's so interesting to listen to just to get into her. your brain and to hear you speak of these things from on a level that so many people are so quick to kind of like brush aside and not really delve into, you know, that it's just the importance and the emotional impact.
Yes.
of love in the way that you portray it. You know, it's we all face it, we all go through it, but it's just the connection that you have, the way that you've portrayed it in your story is just so deep and profound that
mm-hmm.
I'm just amazed listening to you speak about the book, about the story and the emotions.
Yeah.
Which
and a lot of it comes from just using words when they're appropriate and not using them when they're not. Like most of us use the word love much too often, and I'm just like anybody else on that. But when I write, I'm very careful with every word.
Yes.
Yeah.
What reminds me is that Ubi does have another work in progress here, and it is a book that I just happened to glance at online here today. Could you tell us a little bit about that, Ubi? We've got less than a little more than 2 minutes left here. And tell
sure.
everybody where they can find you on the Internet.
Let me start with where they can find me, and then if there's time left, I'll talk about my current project. So you can see highlights of my work, my writing, my art on my website, which is uviart.com. uviart.com. It includes poems, short stories, sculptures, paper engineering, oil painting, watercolor, charcoal, pen, whatever. In addition, I post my thoughts about the creative process on my blog, and this is uviart.blogspot.com. uviart.blogspot.com. And in addition, I have a Q&A group on Goodreads where you can engage in conversation with me on a variety of topics, such as point of view of the characters, advice relating to the publication process, and the latest news about my books. And you can also visit my author page on Amazon and my author page on Goodreads, where you can find my bio and my books and even animations that I created. Do we have time for my next project or no?
You can tell us the name of the book.
The name of the book is Home. And it's a simple word, but a loaded one. You can hear a certain longing for an ideal place, a place that can never be found again. And the book is a combination of my work and my father's work that I found during the week of the Shiva, the mourning period after his death. And these are works that have never seen the light before. And now I combine his work with my poems and stories, and it's going to be published sometime in the fall.
Very good. And Ubi, thank you so much for being on here. We absolutely, no pun intended here, we loved Apart From Love, and don't be Apart From Love. Everybody, get out there and buy that book, Apart From Love, from Ubi. And thank you so much again, Ubi, for being on, and we'll catch you again.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Orbin, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, there. Your name is Robin. That's right. I'm so flabbergasted over what we just heard. That
I know.
Has taken a nap here. Not a nap because I was uninterested, but a nap because I was just profoundly moved by all of that. And Robin, it looks like
you were standing in awe of her presence.
I was.
Just everything about her presence.
And I think it is appropriate that she would be the 29th author we've had on the Writer's Lounge. And this is, and I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but this is our anniversary show. We have now been on Blog Talk Radio now for 1 year, and hopefully we'll have many more years to come. I want to thank everybody out there, as I have done so on our Facebook site, and I hope that you will go over there and see what we have. Got a lot more planned for you, and next time, of course, we'll be heading over to River Falls, Wisconsin, to Rochelle Haruska's Coffee House to try to save that from closing up. So join us on September 3rd. And as they say, Robin, good reading and good writing, and we'll talk to you next time.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather.